Hey, Jack.
Hey, Brian.
You know, life is sad sometimes.
Not in my experience.
Well, when people die, it gets sad.
Oh, yeah. When that happens, it's real bad.
But there's a silver lining.
Heaven?
No, Jack. Sometimes you get paid to read obituaries in your podcast. Did you know that?
Well, that's even better than heaven.
Yeah. So it's money coming into the podcast. So I reached out to some funeral homes and they sent me some obituaries and said, hey, listen, if you guys can read these on the show, then you can make some serious money. You just have to treat it with gravitas.
Okay. Gravitas. I got it. So these are some real silent partners.
Not our current sponsor, Silent Partners, but these are people who are legitimately deceased and want to have that final biography out there. To remember them by.
Great. I love this. So,
and I can't do the voice, obviously, because I'm in the Screen Actors Guild and after and stuff. So I'm forbidden from participating. This is a non-union endeavor, unfortunately. But it's good for you.
Well, it is, except I'm in that union too, and the WGA.
And I just sent you the script. Yeah, just forget. You know, it doesn't matter. The union people don't even care. They don't
know. Oh, good.
That's I'm much more ethical.
Right. No, I don't care about union rules.
So I just sent you.
I just got it.
The obituary. And if you could just read it, the funeral home people are going to love it, assuming you treat it with gravitas. And we will have some money coming in besides the money coming in from Silent Partners, silentpartners.com. No, silent.partners.
You're such an idiot. Silent.partners.
That's right. That's what I said.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. Obituary. I've never read this before in my life. I'm going to do it with a lot of gravitas because it's sad.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you some music, too.
Okay, great. Love music.
You hear that?
No.
Okay, well, there's music. I'm playing sad music.
Okay, cool. I'm listening through my deaf ear, so that's probably the issue. All right, here we go. Liz Thompson. We regret to announce the passing of Mrs. Elizabeth Liz Thompson, beloved wife and attempted mother. Liz departed this world on Thursday at the age of 88, surrounded by several friends who were also in the van she was driving. Liz was born on January 5th, 1936, in the picturesque town of Meadowbrook, known for its rolling hills and violent lynchings back in the racism days. Liz was a pillar of strength and resilience, weathering her life's many storms with grace and dignity. When her first child, Lucas, died during childbirth, she was unfazed, showing up at work the very next day holding an empty onesie. It's much lighter without a dumb old baby in it, she told co-workers. Nobody needs a dumb old baby anyway. When her second child, Nathan, was kidnapped at the age of 2, she once again appeared extraordinarily resilient. I guess someone else wanted Nathan even more, she would tell friends. I'm sure he's having a grand old time. After losing her daughter Grace in a freak accident, she found solace in her role as chairman of the nonprofit Mothers Against Hair Dryers Next to the Bathtub. All the while, Liz kept on smiling and carrying on. Even when her beloved husband John of 43 years was taken from her suddenly, she was able to see the silver lining. John died doing what he loved, being murdered by Colombian prostitutes. Liz's warmth and affection knew no bounds. She would leave rice out for birds and chocolate-covered grapes for dogs. A celebration of Liz's life will be held on Saturday, March 10th, 2024, at Meadowbrook Community Church. In lieu of flowers, we kindly request that donations be made to any organization dedicated to abolishing the SAT and any other method of determining academic capability.
The gravitas was not there, I'm afraid.
Man, she is. Liz led a wild life, and I wasn't quite prepared for that.
No, she had it tough. She had a lot, you know, that's just steady stream of horrible things.
Yeah, I mean, chocolate covered grapes for dogs. I feel like it's probably going to kill the dogs.
I wouldn't know. I'm a dog owner.
Well, that would then lead me to believe that you would know.
I'm not reading any books on it. It's just there.
Are there a lot of books about chocolate-covered grapes for dogs?
Well, there was one.
Oh, really? What was it called?
It was Pat Benatar's Guide to Chocolate-Covered Grapes. Yep. Pat Benatar's Guide to Chocolate Covered Grapes.
Man, that's right. I remember she was on The Daily Show promoting that. When did that book come out?
That came out in 1984.
It's weird that she was on The Daily Show promoting it when the book had come out 16 years prior to the start of The Daily Show.
Yeah, that's when she was big back in the 80s.
No, I know, but I figured she was doing the dog grape book to sort of get back into the pop culture conversation.
Post-career.
Yeah.
I could be misremembering. You know, it's been a while.
I doubt that. I trust your memory. I mean, it was only, 40 years ago. This is the 40-year anniversary of the book coming out.
Yeah, you're right. 40 years.
So, 1984. Wow. Well, So tell me really quickly, please. What were some of your big takeaways from Pat Benatar's Guide to Chocolate Covered Grapes for Dogs?
Pat Benatar's Guide to Chocolate Covered Grapes for Dogs. Mm-hmm. Well, she was a dog enthusiast. I remember it started the foreword of the book said, I've grown up with dogs all my life. I love dogs. Mm-hmm. I love, they're in my life so briefly. And I love them so very much. They bring so much joy to me for the weeks that I have them. Mm-hmm. And I wish God had invented an animal that would live longer. It's just cruel, she would say. She was saying that their short lives were it was just unfair because they're happy animals.
Mm-hmm. They are.
And she would welcome them. She'd go to the adoption places and bring them home and just treat them to chocolate covered grapes. And, and then within a matter of days, sometimes weeks, they're gone. And she said it was very hard. It was the inspiration for a lot of her music.
Oh, really? So like Heartbreaker?
Heartbreaker was about dogs. Love is a Battlefield.
Yep.
Was about dogs.
What was the sort of the story behind Love is a Battlefield in the doggy world?
Well, I mean, because she would love the dog. Mm-hmm. And then, and then next thing she'd wake up in the morning and there's a dead dog next to her on the floor. And it was just and she would just say, Love is a Battlefield.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good backstory.
And then, of course, Strut was about dog funerals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about Hit Me With Your Best Shot?
That was about, she would attempt to revive the dog. She'd bring the dog to the vet and see if there's anything you can do. And they'd say, we don't think so. And then she would look over at the gallery of hypodermic needles and just say, hit me with your best shot.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yep. The song I Need a Lover was also about this?
Yeah.
What was that?
I need a lover who won't drive me crazy. And then in the parentheses, if you had the LP, it says by dying. they cut it off for the MP3s.
Oh, and for radio.
And for radio.
Back in the day. Yeah. What about In the Heat of the Night?
Well, you know what that's about. That's about doggy menstruation.
Jesus.
For the brief amount of time they're there. Sometimes they didn't even menstruate. They were just very young.
Right. They couldn't even get to one cycle under Pat Benatar's care.
Yeah. It's sad. But she loved such a great guide.
She, she had such a big heart.
She really did.
And what were
Which
the
is
photos?
Ironic. It's ironic because Pat Benatar had a big heart, but she was thin. Mm-hmm. But heart was big. As two Pat Benatars.
Now you played in the cover band in college in Ithaca, didn't you? Fat Benatar.
I was in Fat Benatar. Yeah, we were a fat shaming band, and Fat Benatar. I was the lead singer, it wasn't really like singing. It was more like I would come on stage with a hoagie and just start gnawing on it during the the band would kind of cover the songs. Mm-hmm. There was a bunch of bands like that.
There were?
Yeah.
What were some of the other bands that were like that? Because I don't remember any.
Well, there was Fat Matheny. Todd Blubgren. The Who is that over there? They're so huge.
Right. The Police need to arrest that tub of shit.
That's right. That was one.
But man, fat shaming was, it's, you can't do it now, but boy, in the 80s, it was not only commonplace, but profitable.
It was a thing. Yeah. There was a lot of money in fat shaming back in the 80s. Mm. It's not there now. It's kind of like newspapers. It's died out.
Yeah.
And typewriters.
Yeah, that's right. History books sort of do lump those three together.
Yep. Sad. Progress.
Sort of like Lex Thompson. What's her name? Like Liz Thompson dying. It's sad.
It is sad. It's sad not getting paid. It's sad that Liz passed away. It's sad when your dog dies.
Man, why do we start the shows in such a sad manner?
I don't know. And, you would think our sponsor, Copy Plus.
No, Silent Partners.
Our sponsor, Silent Partners, silent.partners.
Yep.
That's the web address.
Yep.
You would think that they would let us know and give us some notes, like, don't start the show off with a death, you dummies.
Well, we might get those notes because this is the end of our first contract cycle with Silent Partners.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So the we did 5 episodes and this is episode number 5. So we'll see if they re-up.
You know what? I can do you, when you call him to and speak to this gentleman, do you hear him counting the money in the background that we help bring in?
No, that's a good question. The answer is no. It's basically, he sort of screams at me, does anyone listen to this? You can't say that. Get the web address right. Do you even know what we do? And invoice me. He just screams one of those things at me.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can answer all but one of those things.
What's the one you can't answer?
What do you do?
Silent.partners.
Silent.partners.
You're listening to Questionable Material with Jack and Brian, a mostly improvised podcast produced in New York by Jack Helmuth and Brian Sack. QMPodcast.com.
Hey, Brian.
Hi, Jack.
How are things in your world?
They're pretty good, Jack. We just got the permit to dig the foundation for the house that my colleague and I will be building.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
What's the vision for the home that you're going to be building?
This home is going to have a room where you can prepare food.
Mm-hmm.
A room where you can eat food.
Okay. Is this Jetsons? This is crazy.
I know. A room where you can sleep.
Oh, just to sleep?
Just for sleeping. maybe even 3 of them.
Yes. Oh, that's dumb. You don't sleep 3 times a day, dude.
But you might have more than one person that wants a different room.
That didn't occur to me.
And you have places to make water, as we say, in the urinary euphemism business.
Like a divining rod room?
It's similar to a divining rod room. There's a hole that leads down to the center of the earth where you can deposit your fluids.
Uh-huh.
It's like Dune. And your solids. Oh.
It's like Dune?
It's like Dune.
Okay. All right.
Fluids are precious.
So I would find Timothy Chalamet down at the bottom of this hole?
It depends how this next installment performs at the box office.
I suppose that's true. Okay. Well, I'm a big believer in dreams and in dreaming and going for it. Like this, your stupid project is not going to work.
Well, you know what they say?
I don't.
You don't know until you do.
Yeah. That's definitely not a saying.
That's what my grandfather Sam used to say. You don't know until you do.
And what did your grandfather Sam used to do?
Electrocute himself.
That was his profession?
He would touch wires. Yeah, he'd charge money for it. He'd walk up to a wire and he'd say, I'm going to touch this. And people wouldn't touch that and say, well, you don't know until you do. And then he'd take bets from the audience there. They put money into his singed hat. And then he would reach out and grab the wire.
Well, what audience was this?
Pretty much anybody who was in the vicinity. He would just flag them down, say, I'm going to touch this wire. What's it worth to you?
Why was it worth anything to people in that day and age?
Well, you know, there wasn't a lot. If you think about it, there wasn't social media back then. We're talking about the 1920s. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no social media back then. There's not a lot going on. So the chance to see somebody with electricity running through their body, screaming in agony, begging you to pull them off of the wire, was appealing to people. It was worth 10 cents at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that went a long way back then.
Yeah, that's like a pound of beef.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, is that a euphemism?
No, it's literally a pound of beef to prepare and cook for your food in one of these food preparing rooms that you have made up.
That's right. I was going to say, because you were close, because Aunt Fanny was about 15 cents.
I'm glad I said a bunch of extra words before we got to Aunt Fanny. So it sounds like Aunt Fanny was a little bit of a disaster.
She was popular.
That's an interesting way to describe her. Just like a sort of social maven, you know, heading out to Rhode Island to summer, that sort of thing.
No. She was very, she was very well known in the scientific community.
Oh, that's so she was a scientist, a female scientist. That's amazing.
No, she had 12 strains of syphilis.
I'm not an expert, but that seems like a lot.
Apparently it was a lot, and that's why she was so well known in the community. And she spent a lot of time being evaluated, and there's a big history about her. There's a big book out there.
What's the book called, and who wrote it?
Pat Benatar's Guide to Syphilis. Sorry. Pat Benatar's Guide to Syphilis.
You can say it a second time. I'm not going to edit out your laugh.
Don't like to break.
I know you don't. Well,
it's very Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, but I think this never is a little better.
Never that. Liked it when he did that.
No, I know you didn't. So Pat Benatar did a whole second book on syphilis.
Yep.
And your Aunt Fanny is your aunt or great aunt?
She's my great aunt Fanny.
Wow. And she was the ground zero. Of it.
She was the ground zero.
And would your great uncle Sam, would the electricity sort of kill off the syphilis? So is that.
Oh yeah. He didn't have anything. He had no syphilis.
Oh.
You know, the equipment doesn't work when you've been shocked multiple times. He had erectile dysfunction level 7 is what they called it.
But as I well know, it only goes up to level 5.
Yeah, well, I believe there's a book out there that goes into depth on that there are 2 more levels after 5.
I mean, I got to Google this. What book?
Bananarama's Guide. To the levels of syphilis. No, not syphilis.
Erectile dysfunction.
Erectile dysfunction.
Oh my God.
Bananarama's Guide to Erectile Dysfunction.
That sounds really good.
It's a lot of 80s great books came out. You know, a lot of great music, a lot of great books people aren't aware of.
No, this is very informative for me as well.
Thank you.
That's not what I said. What now? Just sort of closing up the loop here on your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long did your uncle, your great uncle Sam? I think it's Sam, right?
Grandpa Sam. Yeah.
Grandpa Sam. So was your grandpa married to your aunt?
Yeah, things were different back then. You know, there's no social media.
That's definitely not related to social media at all.
There was no social media back then. Things were boring. There wasn't a lot going on. So you paid money to see people shock themselves and you married relatives.
I'll take your word for it.
Don't have to take my word for it.
How, where would I get that such information?
It's Glenn Miller's Guide to Marrying Your Mommy. All right.
To marrying your mommy?
Yeah.
And that's Glenn Miller of the Glenn Miller Orchestra.
Pennsylvania 65,000. I got a gal in Kalamazoo.
Okay. Well, wow, Brian. Good stuff, man.
Thank you, Jack.
Thanks for having such a great family.
Jack.
Yes, Brian.
You remember that lady who died?
Betty White?
No, the one you talked about in the beginning of the show. Liz.
Oh, Liz Thompson. Yeah, I miss Liz.
Yeah, it's sad, but someone else has also died.
No, not another one. What are the odds of that?
I don't know. It's crazy to me, but it just so happens someone has died, which presents itself an opportunity for to get paid reading the obituary, which I'm sending you right now.
That's great.
It's on its way. And
I tell you,
once
Brian,
again, it's gravitas is the word of the day. Gravitas.
I understand that. It is challenging for me to do the gravitas thing without having read it beforehand.
I know, but this is how obituaries work, and it's sad.
It's not how obituaries work. Okay. I have gotten the second one. I have never read this before. It is open on my screen.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Gravitas.
We mourn the passing of Mr. David Vasquez, a respected businessman and pillar of his community, who departed this world on Monday. David, aged 56, leaves behind a legacy of hard work, integrity, and generosity that will be remembered by all those who had the privilege of knowing him. Born in Tijuana, Mexico, in 1967, David's father, Ronaldo, raised him with a strong work ethic. His mother, Isabella, taught him the importance of chicken and rice. These values would guide him throughout his life. From a young age, he demonstrated a natural aptitude for entrepreneurship and chicken for dinner. He perused his passion for roofing with unwavering dedication and determination. He moved to the United States in 1990. In 1992, after having chicken and rice, David founded Vasquez Roofing Company, a business that would become synonymous with quality craftsmanship, reliability, and customer satisfaction. David brought with him an old-world methods of roofing, which included bypassing the normal and expected, quote, safety measures, in favor of more cost-effective and less tedious methods, such as building scaffolding with warped broom handles and discarded pool cues. David's cost-effective, improvised safety methods were a big hit for folks wanting more bang for their buck. A devoted husband, father, and friend, David cherished his family above all else, even chicken and rice. He was a loving husband to his wife, Maria, and a devoted father to his two children, Miguel and Isabella. He was always happiest when surrounded by his loved ones and not falling off scaffolding. David's passing leaves a void in the hearts of all who knew him, and a discarded pool cue in his left lung. But his legacy of integrity, compassion, and service will continue to inspire and uplift us in the days ahead. He will be remembered. A celebration of David's life will be held on Saturday, March 10th, 2024, at St. Anthony's Catholic Church, where friends, family, and members of the community will come together to honor his memory and pay tribute to his remarkable life. In lieu of flowers, please bring chicken and rice. That one was all over the place.
Really was. You were very low on the gravitas meter.
I tried to sell the hell out of that one. I really put my full effort into that.
Yeah, no, I can see it. I see it, but you just have these moments where it's just like you think it's silly.
I feel bad for him and the family.
It is a tragedy.
It is. I mean, the pool cue right through the lung.
Ugh. Got to hurt. I hope it was at least had a little rosin on the end there, that little chalk. Break up the.
Yeah. I don't know. It's how I've always wanted to go. So young, though.
So young.
56.
That's scary.
You don't want to see
people dying at that age.
Nope.
I'm staying off of scaffolding.
Yeah, you're nearly 56.
Nope.
Oh. Huh.
Just turned 37.
It's really odd. Hey, Brian.
Yeah?
you know, you, I always turn to you for advice when I need a little bit of help in my life. And I'm at one of those moments again right now. If I could just sort of tell you about what's going on.
Yeah. Reminds me of the Beatles.
What reminds you of the Beatles?
Yeah, I get by with a little help from my friends. I'm the friend. I'm helping you get by.
Yeah. I mean, we're work friends.
Work adjacent.
Work adjacent people who know each other. So here's the situation. Tomorrow at my kid's school is career day.
Oh.
Now, you know, we're still sort of new to town. You know, we've been here for a year and a half. So we've gotten a little bit more adjusted, but there still is this pressure to really nail it for my kids, because they still, while they are more comfortable, they still haven't exactly integrated as fully as the old town that we came from. So there's a lot of pressure on me to really get career day right. And I was wondering, you know, you're such a good showman. You're such a good storyteller. You're such a good director and coach. You're such a good pyrotechnics guy. I know you're going to be the guy to sort of give me some advice into how to make career day more interesting, to make me seem cooler to the kids. To this is there's an audience of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Middle schoolers, of which my kids are. My son is in 7th grade. My daughter is in 6th grade. So can you help me make career day more interesting?
Yeah.
And to make myself, again, I need to look awesome for these kids. So that way my kids will sort of have some of that awesome sauce rubbed on them.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to present, you know, I was a TV writer. I'm not even sure these kids really know what TV is. At this point in life, you know, what can I do to make sort of a boring old 49-year-old, you know, dumpy gray haired guy like myself seem more interesting to that audience?
If I were you, I would stroll in there. A lot of confidence, you know, the confidence you should have in front of these kids. You could beat any of these kids up, I think. And that should give you a sense of confidence. That would give me confidence. I walk out there and like, look at these kids. You could look them square in the eye and be like, I could beat the crap out of that kid. I'm not scared of anybody here.
Yeah. I like this, especially the 6th graders, but
kind of energizing. And you look at, you're going to scan the crowd and you're going to see, you look around, take in the crowd, kind of like, you know, squint a little bit, like you're analyzing everybody, and then just point to the white boys and you just say, get out. One after the other until they're
okay.
And then, you know, and when they stand up, you know, you just say, show them the door. Say, there's no point in career day for you. Nobody's hiring you. Get out. But as they start walking to the door, if any of them seem a little bit effeminate, stop them. Say, hey, you there kind of walking effeminate. Come back here. You might have a chance.
Oh,
you're low on the totem pole, but you have a chance.
Yeah.
Sit down. And then you start your spiel.
Okay.
And you say, okay, my name's Jack.
Yep.
I'm a TV writer. Anybody here know what TV is? They're just going to kind of look at you and look around. It's like, you know what? YouTube. They're all going to know YouTube.
Yeah.
You'd be like, well, it's like YouTube, but it sits on your table or on the wall. That might help put it in perspective for these kids.
That's really good.
And so you'd say, there are shows out there and I would write on them and put the words in the actors' mouths.
Good.
And you'd say, do you know what an actor is? Yes. They might say yes, no. Yeah, you know what an actor is. It's somebody who has a job with, you know, because somebody put something in their mouth and they were given a job as an actor or an actress. And then you put the words in their mouth. So if they work for Harvey Weinstein or whatever, they'll understand. The kids are savvy these days. They know everything.
Sure.
You want to ask some questions. Because one, you know, if you ask, just have them ask questions, you don't have to prepare anything.
It's sort of
fly off the cuff.
Like billing silent partners. I'm not really interested in doing that work.
Yes. Silent.partners. That's the domain.
Yeah.
No.com. Do not do the .com.
No, those people are monsters.
Your life is in danger if you do the .com.
That's right.
And you won't even get the warning on your browser. You're just doomed.
Yes. The at that point, some Russian has everything in your life.
They have the kompromat.
Yes. So silent dot partners. Okay.
So you have the kids ask questions. They're going to ask you questions like, so you know, what do you, what, of course they're going to know what TV show you worked on.
Sure.
Okay. Well, you just, you know, this is where you got to be creative. You're in a creative field.
Yeah.
You got to lie.
That's great.
I wrote for Mr. Beast.
That's what they want to hear.
You know, because if you say anything else, they don't know what that is, what these shows are. I wrote for Mr. Mr. Beast. I love Mr. Beast. That's right. I wrote the one where he gives a kid an island. and then they're going to ask other questions like what's Mr. Beast like?
Mm-hmm. What do I say?
You want to be dramatic.
Oh,
be like, he's a demon. He's a bad man.
Okay.
And you make up stories that the kids won't forget. Like, he made me eat spiders.
Mm-hmm.
He's a mean person. He made me eat spiders before he even paid me.
Wow.
That's and I really had a cat mean. And he stole my cat. Said, no cats for you.
He just stole it straight up?
He catnapped it.
Oh, man. Okay. What exactly happens to these kids who are kicked out of my career day session?
Well, I mean, they're going to go down. They're going to be upset a little bit.
Okay.
They've been demoralized. You've told a middle schooler that they have no future, no career.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be sad, and they're going to go back home, and they're going to tell their parents.
Okay.
Parents are going to complain.
Snitches.
School's going to get a phone call.
Not cool.
And you won't have to do this career day bullshit ever again.
That's a great outcome.
I'm just looking out for you.
That's really good. Well, I mean, I'm concerned by your initial idea because, you know, I live in Connecticut. That's if I tell all the white boys to stand up and leave, I mean, that's all there is. It's nothing but like just a sea of Vineyard Vines shirts leaving the room.
You're right. I'm sorry. I forgot you were in Connecticut.
Yeah. I got no audience except a bunch of, you know, seventh grade girls.
They say Connecticut is almost as white as Montana.
That's what they say. Yeah. It's what's on the license plate.
But just much smaller.
Yes, we are smaller.
And higher taxes.
Oh, yeah.
And Joe Lieberman.
I mean, he was from here. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, my mother was from Connecticut.
I know she was. She won Miss Connecticut.
Miss Connecticut, 1957 in the Miss America pageant.
Wow. I mean, that's
the dynamic redhead. She was a redhead, Jack. She was an Irish redhead.
Oh, wow. Did the curtains match the drapes?
You know what? I don't remember. It was a little hazy when I came out. My eyes didn't open for a day or two.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was her vagina that sort of messed up?
It was clumpy. But yeah, she was a redhead.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in this was 1957, they put her on TV afterwards. She was a weather girl.
After giving birth to you?
No, not right away. They gave her some time to get that stomach back down in order.
Yeah, of course.
But then being the 50s, they put her in a bikini.
She was like a bikini weather girl?
She was a bikini weather girl. I think it was WNAC. It was Channel 7 or something in Boston.
Holy cow. Now, because we're always doing a bunch of stupid nonsense every episode, this part is true.
That part's
100,
true.
100%. Brian's mom in 1957 really was Miss Connecticut. And this part really happened, by the way.
Yeah, she was a bikini model weather girl.
Wow.
So she was Liz. Her name was Liz Kelly. That was her stage name.
Oh,
she was
okay.
She was Miss Tuesday, the dynamic redhead. The dynamic redhead. And Liz Kelly. And she was the Tuesday night weather girl. She'd be in a bikini and knew nothing about meteorology, but just would point to the thing and say, you know, rain's coming. And true fact, one of her colleagues from the Miss America pageant was boning Ted Kennedy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
right after
amazing.
He got married. Yeah, right after he got married. He's a good guy. Solid.
Solid human being.
Solid human being.
Who was your mom banging at the time?
Ted Kennedy.
I'm so sorry. I didn't. I'm so sorry. Okay. I wouldn't have asked if I knew.
That one's not true. She didn't. But Marilyn did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, give your mom some credit. Like, we don't know she didn't. Like,
you're right. I don't know she did. Well, I know she didn't like him.
Yeah, maybe
Marilyn,
because
Marilyn was having a dinner party.
Okay.
And a bunch, and then and my dad was there, and Ted decided he wanted to see Marilyn for a little bunga bunga. And so Marilyn shut down the whole dinner party.
Really?
Yep. And then as they were filing out of the townhouse in Boston, Ted was down at the bottom of the stairs waiting. And they all walked right by him and he didn't make eye contact. My dad remembers that vividly. He just like was looking down at the floor as everybody kind of filed by.
That's that a wild story.
Yeah. It's a classy man.
Just, and everyone knows he just wants to bang Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
And get the hell out.
Not Marilyn Monroe. Her name was Marilyn.
Oh, the other one there. Okay. Okay. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
So everyone files out knowing that that Ted Kennedy just wants to bang this chick. And he's just
sitting at the bottom of the stairs, looking down at the floor. Fun story.
Wow.
My dad never liked Ted Kennedy after that.
No, I guess not. Ted Kennedy tried to murder your mother a number of times though, right?
He was practicing trying to murder. He wanted to get it down right. He tried different techniques until he mastered it.
God bless him. What were some of the ways he failed to murder your mom?
One time he said, "You want to go for a shopping cart, you know, funsies." My mother, they were in Beacon Hill in Boston. And so he put her in a shopping cart from the Woolworths back in the day.
Yeah, I love Woolworths.
And they started rolling down the hills and then he kind of bailed out of the shopping cart. And I think he was hoping it would go into traffic and get her killed. But it just kind of slid up against a car and caused cosmetic damage. My mother got out. She was a little confused.
Sure.
On my mother.
The cosmetic damage is on your mom. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, her face hit the side view mirror and just caused a little bruising.
Sure.
But, you know, when you're in the Miss America pageant, you know how to use makeup. And so in a matter of minutes, you never knew that there was a bruise there, thanks to Ted.
And if you're dating a Kennedy, you need to know how to use makeup.
You have to know how to cover up those bruises.
Yeah, absolutely.
Camelot.
So, and just really quickly, there was one sort of even more outrageous way that he tried to kill your mom, Ted Kennedy, that is.
Yes.
Yeah. Just, I remember you told me back in the day, but I swear to God, I can't remember the details.
So he had a friend.
Okay. That checks out so far.
Who told him, who said, is like, "You want a surefire way to kill a lady?"
And Ted said.
And he said, "Of course, yes. I don't want any kind of possible, you know, I don't want to be swept up in this. I have presidential ambitions. Mm-hmm. I need to know what's the best way to kill a lady."
Yeah.
And this guy had read a book. Mm-hmm. Didn't get it right.
Oh.
But he said, "Feed her chocolate covered grapes."
And he got that from a book, you said.
Yes.
I don't suppose you remember. I know it's a long time ago, but do you remember the name of the book and who wrote it?
Kill Your Pets with Ringo Starr.
That one I have read. Sometimes I will read that to Jack for a bedtime story.
That's a classic.
That is a classic.
That and Shock-Headed Peter.
Well, gosh, that's a heck of a story. I'm glad now, you know what, you know, the whole career day thing, you know, forget it. I'm just going to basically tell the story of your mom and just sort of be done with it.
There you go.
And
you also have the same benefit that you'll never be invited back again.
Yay. Well, Brian, I think that pretty much brings to close another episode of Questionable Material. The last, for now, episode sponsored by, what the heck's the name of that company?
Silent Partners. And the website
is? Website?
Silent Partners.
Silentpartners.com or silent.partners?
No, that's the one you got to get out of your brain. It's the domain is silent.partners. Because you can do those now. You can have Brian.info, Brian.movie, Brian.this, Brian.partners. Ooh, I like that.
Oh, Brian, what would be on the website Brian.partners?
Just the lemon party graphic.
Really quickly, Brian, if I could, take a quick personal moment. I took my son on a drive around the Southwest during his winter break. My daughter and wife went to and baby went to Washington, D.C., where they got bed bugs. My son and I. Yeah, it was super fun. And my son and I went and drove around the Southwest. Our car got stranded in Page, Arizona, and a tow truck driver named Mark came and drove us 3 hours from there to St. George, Utah. I just wanted to give a shout out to Mark. He's 22 years old. He's an avid gun collector. He's got a katana at home. He's got a giant clip of bullets right in the front of his dashboard in his pickup. He's got a go bag in the back. He's always ready to hit the road for when, you know, the liberals start, you know, bombing the good normal Americans.
Yep.
And I just wanted to give Mark a shout out. Mark, you're the man. Thank you for saving us.
Does he happen to be a listener?
No, well, he's a listener now because I told him, you know, 3 hours in a truck with someone, you're going to tell someone about your podcast.
Ah, all right, Mark.
So, yeah. So Mark, you know, he asked me like, what's the thing you're most ashamed of? And so, you know, told him about the podcast and he's been listening. He texted me and told me he's been enjoying the show.
Oh, good. All right.
Yeah.
I'm glad he likes it.
Yeah. So do you have any, a final thing that you want to say to Mark?
Yes.
Oh, good. Just as a sign off, like, what would you like to say to Mark who right now he's got to be on call 24 hours a day. He's 22 years old, driving around Nevada and Utah and Arizona. What would you like to say to Mark?
He's on call 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So when does he drink wine?
He doesn't drink anymore. For the last 2 years, Mark has been sober since January of 2020, January 1st, 2022.
You really learn a lot in those 3 hours.
Yeah, I learned that. That's a true fact about Mark.
All right, then. Do I have advice for Mark? I forgot the question was.
No, if you just have anything that you want to say to Mark, it could be advice. It could be, you know, thank you for saving the heart and soul of the podcast, whatever it is. You know, it's just an opportunity for you to reach out to a listener in a very sort of intimate way.
Sure. I think we all know by now that the reason your car stranded you was because I was responsible for it because
what?
In an effort to take over this podcast and just be the sole voice on it. I was hoping you'd be stranded in the desert and that you and your son would perish in the hot Arizona sun.
What?
So I got to thank Mark for messing up my plans. But that's fine. You know what, Jack? What if you and I just have a fun game where we race a shopping cart down a hill?
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
That was Questionable Material with Jack and Brian. Subscribe on any podcast platform. Visit us at qmpodcast.com.